now time for the Port Podcast.
We're rolling. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Port Podcast. Today, we are recording episode 5, and we thank you all for tuning in and checking out all of the latest episodes. I hope you enjoyed the last one with our mayor, Donna Reardon. And today we have a really amazing guest with Craig and I today. We're really, really excited. Welcome to the show. Let's just get right into it. Pat Riley, welcome to the Port Podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Kate, and thank you also, Craig, for the invitation. I must confess that if it was a few years ago and you invited me to a port pod, I'd have thought we were going whale watching.
Yes. Who knows? Maybe we'll be doing a port pod in the port pod at whale watching. Who knows, right?
A few generations back.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. We're, as Kate mentioned, we're 5 episodes in now as of today, and we're thrilled with the people that have chosen to come on here and all the interactions we've had with the public on YouTube and on, you know, people downloading the podcast on Apple and Spotify. The interest has been tremendous. So we're going to keep bringing on special guests like Pat and have great content for the viewers.
And, you know, having Pat on today, we've been really excited to have you on. The last 4 or 5 episodes, we've talked about having you on and about, you know, your experience. And for those watching, if you don't know or you have a brief familiarity with what Pat has done in his career, he was the business agent for the ILA from 1986 till just 2021. He has a wealth of experience and is still, you know, working here in St. John and in the region. Pat, would you like to just tell our audience a little bit about how you got started with that in the 1970s? And where you're at now?
I'd be happy to, Kate. I'm a great lover of the Port of St. John, as Craig knows. I became familiar with it while I was in grade school, actually, St. Patrick's in the Lower West. And a lot of families there were port families going to that school. So there was a lot of port talk, and I took an interest in it right away. When I went to high school, in 1966, actually, I got a card with the CPR truckers, a number as we called it, and I was able to work nights there while going to high school with the CPR truckers. A number of years later, I graduated to a day gang and a day number. So again, taking a step up at the port, and then in 1978, I very fortunately became a member of ILA Local 273. And immediately took an interest in the union. In 1979, I was elected to the Health and Safety Committee, and shortly thereafter became the chairperson of the Health and Safety Committee for the Port of St. John. And then in 1986, as you mentioned before, Kate, I was elected as the business agent, secretary treasurer of ILA Local 273, and remained in that position until 2029. I was very fortunate to have a very exciting career. A year into my career in 1979, we were called upon by a group called the Agents for the Disappeared, a group of Argentine expatriates who were organized in Toronto to boycott a ship that was taking heavy water to Argentina. Immediately we were curious about what it was all about, and the more we learned, the more we knew that we had to respect the boycott. There were some 30,000 people who had been disappeared by the military junta there in Argentina in 1979. 30,000 people, and 70% of them, we learned, were Argentine trade unionists. So trade unionists, college professors, educators, students, people who opposed what was going on with the military junta, and particularly the fact that they were a very murderous regime. They had a partnership with South Africa at the time, so they were trying to acquire nuclear capability, and that was another fear of the people who opposed that shipment. Fortunately for us, there was back in those days, a red Tory. Flora MacDonald was the foreign affairs minister in Ottawa at that time. The Joe Clark government was in office, and they were quick to listen to what the significance of this boycott was all about. And not too long thereafter, there were a number of the Argentine prisoners that were released right away. As the notoriety for the military junta grew around the world, a few years later there was an election, and a democratic election, and they were, of course, deposed. So it was a life learning experience for me, and it certainly characterized my union career. The concept of social unionism and paying attention to the fact that we can impact people globally, as we know in this industry, Craig, and you're aware of.
Yeah, that's such a powerful story, Pat.
Wow,
So tell us, you know, what drew you to union leadership and getting involved, and ultimately going from that experience a year into your career to the business agency in 1986?
Well, again, it was something that that I had a preconceived notion about. My father was in the legal profession and was also a politician, so I was used to seeing people looking for help, and was taught by my parents that you help anybody you can help, and so it was that early upbringing. But also when I got involved in the labor movement, in particular ILA Local 273, there were a lot of strong leaders there at that time. Fellow by the name of Jimmy Orr and Abel LeBlanc, later on became a politician himself, and Fred Nice was the business agent that I succeeded. They were all people that I really admired and were close friends. So I learned from a lot of good people. I'll put it that way, and especially in respect to the idea that the labor movement has to not be selfish and ensure that it gets involved out in the community.
Yeah.
I've always tried to do that. Be a volunteer, yep, in the name of our local, and we have a lot of good people in our local who do likewise, as they've been taught they should. In 1981, I attended the Labor College of Canada, and that was one of the courses actually in respect to remembering the importance that of the labor movement and its responsibility, if I can put it that way, to get out into the community and volunteer and make sure that we all work together.
Right. So Pat, we've talked a lot in the first four episodes about labor being the heart of the port and the waterfront. Maybe for the sake of our viewers, could you explain a little bit about the type of work that occurs on the waterfront, not just in St. John, but in general, what type of labor the ILA does around North America?
Oh, certainly, and it's fair to say, first of all, that it's different in every port, and for a port to be successful, of course, it has to be diversified. Mm-hmm. When I first came into the union onto the waterfront in the 1960s, it was all very much work that involved manpower and muscle power,
right,
if you can put it that way. A lot of bagged cargoes. We handled flour. We handled asbestos. We handled grain. Most of these cargoes were bagged and involved 18-man gangs, where there would be 12 men in the hold of a vessel, and wow, you had to work very hard. Also, a lot of course, because of the mills around the city, the pulp mill and the paper mill out on Bayside Drive, a lot of work with that. And originally when I went there, even that was very much a job where you needed a strong back. We used cotton hooks back in those days.
Oh, wow.
They were very much a tool. In fact, you couldn't get hired if you didn't have a cotton hook hanging off your shoulder.
Oh, my.
And they were very much a tool of the trade. And from using them on shackles to unscrew them to using them as a lever when lifting. And I mentioned them specifically when I referenced the pulp paper, because those bales themselves would weigh 550 pounds. and sometimes that cotton hook was your lever to flip them over. And I remember the expression box meet them, where you had to flip them over and then very quickly push it on its side because they wanted them stowed that way.
That's incredible.
And wow, 550 pounds. That's crazy. I remember working at a lobster plant, and the crates were anywhere from 100 to 200 pounds, and it took four of us to lift them. Yeah. Two men, two or three ladies at the time, but I couldn't imagine each being 550 pounds.
No.
Wow.
No.
Yeah, so none of the longshore workers back in those days had to go to a gym.
I bet.
Oh, I can only imagine. They'd be selling that workout now.
Yeah, that would become the new workout fad of the year.
You guys are looking to monetize on some ideas.
Yeah. And even today, I'll say this. When we work in the custom shed over there at 1C, a lot of bagged coffee coming in when we have to stuff and de-stuff sheds. And those bags weigh 160 pounds.
Wow.
So
really? Wow.
One guy on each of them, or one longshore worker on each of them, on the ends of those bags, it's you have to be in pretty good shape to do that kind of work.
Yeah.
I'm not signing up, okay, guys? I'm not in that level of shape.
Kate's already declared on this podcast she wants to go right to crane operator.
Yes,
Except she's scared of heights.
Terrified.
So I don't know if that's a good recipe.
It's not
for
realistic,
the future.
But you can always try and dream.
Yeah. There's actually a wide range of skills, Kate. Yeah. Even to the extent where we used to call it the Senate of the ILA, somebody who works in the checkers classification,
right?
Where it's really you're tabulating and ensuring that the numbers are always right and directing where the cargo goes and is stowed and so on and so forth. So, over 100 skills, all different types of equipment. The container cranes, of course, are our quarterbacks of the waterfront.
That's a great term. Yeah,
it's a good term.
They're very crucial and very skilled individuals. Yeah. They can really make things work a lot easier for everybody if they have a great skill level. Right. But they're not alone, as we always point out. You can have the greatest crane driver on the waterfront up there in that crane, and if everybody's not working with them, then your container tonnage is not going to work out. So everybody has to work together, and it's then that you really attain the best production. We've always been very, very proud of our production. I always like to mention that. In fact, Craig, as you'll recall, there not too long ago, I sent you over a document dated 1988, which provided that the run term container terminal of the day was the most productive in terms of containers handled per gang member on the eastern seaboard of North America.
Yeah.
So we were always very proud of that, and we still are today. We've got a very hardworking workforce.
Yeah, no question. So you touched on a little bit of the history, Pat. So you know, we have had a number of years, unfortunately, in the last couple of decades where hours worked on the waterfront, you know, weren't quite as strong as we had hoped, but we've seen quite a reversal in the last number of years, specifically 2022, and off to a pretty good start here in 2023. What is your current outlook on the activity of the port and maybe the next few years as you see it?
Well, as I left the port, I couldn't be more optimistic, Craig. That was such fabulous news to hear that CPR had purchased that CMQ railway in Maine. That really established the fact that they were for real, that they wanted to come back to the Port of St. John, and they wanted to again establish the Port of St. John as their eastern gateway to the world. So. Just fabulous, fabulous news. And, of course, DP World, who also is a container terminal operator with global connections, the fact that they're working together is also just fantastic news for the Port of St. John. In 1981, we worked over 1 million man-hours at the Port of St. John, over That's a million man-hours.
That is a crazy number.
Yes,
wow.
In 2009, we were down to 99,500.
Right.
So there you are. And now, last year, I believe, we were up to 314,000 man-hours.
I was going to say, I think just above 300 is what I heard.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, up from, well, double what we worked essentially the year before.
It's incredible.
So yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
that's what it means when you've got a container terminal that is in the big lakes, so to speak.
Yep.
And that's where we are now. We're back in the big lakes.
Yeah.
I can recall a time in 1995 when the container terminal actually shut down. Mm-hmm. The year after, CPR had decided that it was in their business interest to abandon the tracks in eastern Canada. Mm-hmm. It was a very down time. At one time, we had no container lines here at the Port of St. John.
Right.
None. Zero.
Right.
I can remember it was a mock container over at Rodney Pier that we sat down. We were trying to get some business from Imeskip, and we thought we had them signed, so we put the container down, had a big ceremony, and then lo and behold, didn't we find out that they changed their mind and decided they couldn't come here. Yeah. Yeah, so it was, we've gone through some tough years, I'm always cognizant of is I remember back to those times when we did that, we got that information from the Canada Ports Corporation of the day established us as the most productive container terminal on the eastern seaboard, and yet in the next few years, all of our business disappeared simply because Halifax was closer to the European continent than we were, and it was a change in world shipping routes that essentially wiped out all our business.
Right.
So such great news to see us back in the game. Yeah. And now we speak positively about the shortcut through Maine.
Yep.
And now we've got rail all the way down to Mexico City. And we've got actually shorter routes between ourselves and India. And it's not just north-south anymore. Now we're again east-west. We're really in the game.
Hold on, you guys ready for it?
So positive.
Gotta give a quick applause for that,
guys.
No, and I want to go back to what you said about around the tough years, or even just business evolving, or you know whether there's big success and a milestone is met. I think from people in my age perspective in their early 30s, you know, it's interesting sometimes when from my perspective, I see announcements of these things, but I don't really maybe understand what they mean. And I think I speak for the average person. And, you know, having hundreds of thousands of additional workforce hours is people working and having money to feed their families. It's having better jobs with better opportunity that are better all around and really better for the region and the community. So I wanted to expand on that a little bit because it's easy to just see, you know, this announcement as something else for somebody, but it affects everybody around, and it will affect opportunities for those that haven't maybe applied yet or haven't been announced yet.
Great
point. So I just think that it's important to kind of take the veil down a little bit on that, because it's really, really, really exciting, you know, for people to maybe have new opportunities that have never even been brought back here yet.
Yeah, and before Pat jumps in there, just to add to that, that's a great point that Kate raised, because working on the waterfront, whether you're in the local union, ILA 273 or other groups, we know that the wage is significantly higher, whether you're at the Port Authority, again, with DP World's terminal, in a union, not in a union, the living wage is significantly higher than the standard that the Human Development Council set. So I think that's a really important point when we talk about why having a port in a community matters. The wages that people get on the waterfront, Pat described it earlier, it's tough, tough work. You're not guaranteed a thing in life, but the compensation when we have this cargo throughput that's going well is rightfully high, and people deserve that money and need that money. And when the Human Development Council specifically puts out targets that, you know, it's over $20 an hour is just to be able to live comfortably, and not have to rely on services and have that good job that gives you a lot of meaning in life, waterfront jobs accomplish that. And you've lived that for decades now.
And I see it also, I see it as people like you who are the business agents who are getting such rounded experience, giving time, sitting on committees, going to meetings, and really learning how to represent the best work ethic, the best opportunities, and the best places to work for people. That's really what I've been learning here so far, and through researching proactively before you got here, and just everything I've heard from everyone working with you. So I wanted to say that. So,
Well, you're exactly right, Kate. And I think it's also important to mention of course, first of all, as Craig mentioned, there is good money to be made in a waterfront job, and we're also thankful for that. It's about bargaining power. We're just very fortunate to be in an industry that people are very dependent upon, the import-export business. It's if you're working at a port, you're working in an industry that has national significance. We have potash railed here all the way from Saskatchewan. Yeah. That's how important this port is, not only to our own local region, but to regions right across the country. And it's also very important to remember that with the port also comes ancillary jobs. Mm-hmm. It's the port itself is very much an intermodal business. It's not only those ships, it's trucks, it's rail, it's the tugboats, it's all these businesses that establish themselves around a port or around the province that depend on the port for their import-export needs. It's very much a job-oriented advantage to have a port. Yeah. As J.K. Irving used to say often to me in discussions with him, there's a reason why we're here at this port in St. Right. John. Yeah. There's a reason why we have our mills here, why we have our businesses here, and it's all because of that port. Yeah. So it's such an advantage. And as you mentioned earlier, in terms of being optimistic about the future, that's really it. As this port grows, the businesses around it are going to grow. Mm-hmm. And those, again, are... I see jobs for young people, and we grew up in a generation this last number of decades where we had to see our young people mm-hmm. leaving town to get jobs. They had no choice, yeah. And it was rare that you had a family that had all their kids at home. So the idea that now that we're growing jobs here in the Port of St. John and New Brunswick is such fabulous news, and we hope we can accommodate so many people coming home and as you mentioned, Craig, the importance of letting people know around the region and in our high schools that these are good jobs here.
These are good jobs.
And again, remembering that the ancillary jobs can't be forgotten.
Well, I have a quick anecdote. I was at the gym the other night, and I'm in the corner with a ball cap on. No one knows who I am or anything. And I overheard these two guys chatting, and one of them said, was just talking about his kids, and it sounded like he had multiple kids. And I just overheard one thing because the port was mentioned and another, and the rail was mentioned. And this gentleman told his colleague or a friend next to him, he said, "It's so great my youngest got on with the short line with MB Southern." Yes. And he's making a tremendous living for a young person, and what a great thing that was. And that's all I heard. That's just that little snippet. And you never know what impact the Port Authority or the ILA and other groups are having by working so hard to try to bring this business here. But when you hear a little snippet like that, that's so real and authentic in that moment, because he's just talking to his friend about how his kid is set up in life.
Makes you proud for sure. And I say that not because you're the CEO and it makes you proud, but it makes you proud, you know, even just in me, you know, being here and learning more about the port as a lifelong St. John person. You know, it is proud to see people getting good opportunities, but I think the port is setting precedent on how they not only are a catalyst for growth, but how other people should be collaborating and working together and getting in a room together and really asking, how do we make the best impact? And is there a point of having organizations that maybe don't want to talk to one another or who aren't looking at the efforts that they're putting in? So if there's duplicate effort or you're not advocating for the right things, and you're just going to stay stagnant in that present state. So I'm seeing a lot of, just a lot of push for a lot of evolution of how processes have been in the past. And that's where we're seeing in the past, even just a year and a half, even with port days and all these things coming up, we're seeing so many good collaborations and partnerships. And it's refreshing as someone who lives here. And it's exciting because I want more and more people that have moved away to come back. And, you know, even if it takes a bit of training or a bit of school, I think it's important to do it because there's so much opportunity. Yeah.
So. Well, that's a great segue because, you know, talking about partnerships and working together in groups, Pat, you and I were involved very early days when the provincial government pushed us to form a workforce partnership. and to kind of come together as a port community and talk about the working port and how we're going to leverage, at that time, infrastructure. And CP had just announced that they were purchasing back that line and were beginning their upgrade. So we were really early days. The cargo hadn't arrived, but you were involved from day one. We had a first meeting out at the Hathaway Pavilion. And you spoke at that. Maybe give us a little bit of your perspective on the early days of the Workforce Partnership and how you've seen the relationship of all the partners evolve in the last couple of years here. Yes.
Well, I would want to give the provincial government great credit, too, for establishing that committee, because it right away it became a very timely partnership. And I certainly personally want to say I learned so much there at those committee meetings, particularly about the importance of affirmative action programs. Mm-hmm. As federally regulated workers, we were very much regulated. When we, for example, established membership rules, which we have to file with the Canada Industrial Relations Board, we have to take great care to ensure that they're not discriminatory, to get away from those old days when it depended only about what your name was as to whether or not you get hired or yep. whether or not... lots of other bad reasons too, as to whether or not you got hired. I shouldn't call them bad reasons, but certainly they weren't the best practices. Yeah. So we were very careful about our rules. It was, you came to our union office, you got a number, and then you went down to the port, and it didn't matter what your gender you were or what ethnicity was or your religion or anything. If you got the most hours, then you were the one that got into the union.
Yep.
But at that committee level, we learned, you know, really that we weren't doing enough. We weren't doing enough. We didn't have, as you mentioned, Kate, we didn't have female crane drivers or female checkers. We didn't, we just thought because we couldn't be charged with being discriminatory that we were all right. But Craig, as you know, brought to that table was somebody from the Learning Exchange, somebody from the Newcomers Society, Mohammed Bagda. Mm. And when we got away from that level and spoke as a local ourselves, we said, look, we've got to change our ways. We've got to make this right. And so we talked about affirmative action, and then we put it into practice. Mm-hmm. And when we were choosing people to expand our referral list, we made sure that there were female applicants there, whether they had the most hours or not, and, mm-hmm. and the same thing with some of our newcomers to the city. You spoke about anecdotes. You heard me mention this before because it really struck home with me. I ran into a friend of ours with the city, Brian Irvining, you know, who has the five and dime bar. And he said, Pat, I got to tell you a story. He said, I've been watching a guy next door trying to get a business started. He started out with trying to get a business going, and it didn't seem to work out for him. And then he got into the pizza business, and that didn't seem to work out for him. And then finally, not too long ago, I ran into him. He was parked out on the street. He had a pretty new car, and he had some new threads, and I said, you finally succeeded, did you? And he said, yes, I did, Brian, he said. And I said, and what business was it that you succeeded in? And he said, I'm working down there at the port with the ILA Local 273.
Yeah,
so
neat.
We were pretty proud to hear that story.
Absolutely.
And you know, with all our new workers, I have to say, they catch on right away. They work very hard. It's so nice to see the diversification in the workforce. We feel like we're finally coming of age.
That's wonderful. Yes. That's so good. Yeah, and we all learn different things from that workforce partnership. And I love your perspective of having the Learning Exchange and the Newcomers Association there. I want to mention too, you mentioned how strong the province was. We had a third party chair of that committee that was not associated with any of our entities. So the Port Authority, the Employers Association, the ILA, DP World. We had an individual, Al Beaudechamp, who just deserves a ton of credit for bringing people together too. And I don't know, I doubt Al would ever come on the podcast. He's a former chair of our board at the Port Authority and a former police chief here in St. John, New Brunswick. But Al's a very unassuming individual, but he really helped bring us all together and see perspectives from the other side. That, I think that's the biggest thing he gave us. And that helped grow all these relationships. Right. So if we're the Port Authority, see it from the ILA's point of view or see it from the employer's point of view and vice versa. That to me was a big takeaway.
Yes, I couldn't agree more, Greg. Yeah, we were all consulted with as to who we would agree to chair this new committee. And everybody, of course, knows Al. He's been a great community leader for years, former police chief here in the city of St. John. And he brought along his very close friend, Bill Todd.
Right.
And between the two of them, they really made things gel at the committee level. It was a joy. We had deputy ministers present at our meetings every time. And, that's how you get things done, I have to say. They were just, it was just a great experience, I'm sure, for all involved and really was a great catalyst for us moving forward. Yeah. And just in the name itself, Craig, and I think I mentioned to you this before, how important it is for people to recognize each other, not as I don't mean to degrade the name team, but I like that word partner much more.
I do.
Much more, so that we're all equals, and I'm not the president, and you're not the stick guy.
Exactly.
You know, it's... partnerships are important, and that's what this port is all about now moving forward. And under very astute and young leadership, I have to give you credit too, Craig.
We really appreciated you
becoming president and CEO, and are very, very confident in you leading us forward.
Thank you. That means a lot. Thank you, Pat.
And I really, really appreciate, learning from your perspective of all the work that you've done throughout the years and the evolution of time and, continuous improvement, new processes, new people, bringing feedback. I think that's how we get to be that global front leader ongoingly as well in the future. And I think there's so many more people coming here, so many people putting, rolling their sleeves up and putting solutions in place. So if we grow a population, we'll have places for them to live.
Yep.
I think those are all really important, because it's great to have these opportunities and jobs or attracting, 2,000 people a year, but we need to make sure that all the other I's and T's are dotted too. And to have people, make sure that they're doing the due diligence and getting good wages, having, good opportunities here is so important.
It is.
Right. And I'm seeing that, from all of you guys and your partnerships and organizations, and working with the Chapman Group, mm-hmm. it really is all integrated into a bigger picture on how everyone is working together and to keep each other in the ecosystem, not work in silos.
No,
alone. So I really appreciate that just, being here. So thank you for showing me just the backstory of that.
Yeah. You're going to think I sound like a broken record, Kate, but relationships are everything. It matters. Yeah. They're hard. Being good at relationships and trying to build them is not a straight line.
Yeah.
There's always going to be disagreements or moments where you have a look at things from a different perspective,
right.
But it's worth it. It's worth taking the time to build the relationships because ultimately it's what's going to take us all as a collective waterfront community to the next level. It's not one piece of business coming and going. It's how well we can all work together and capitalize on the opportunity. That's it.
Yes.
Mic drop. No.
Well, thank you so much, Pat. Yeah. This has been incredible. Thank you for giving us your time. I know you're still very active, both on the waterfront and volunteering, and there's a lot more to come with Port Days, and you've got an initiative too later in the summer to bring a lot of community excitement to the west side, and we look forward to trying to maybe having you back on the podcast and interacting as we get out. Kate and I are going to get out this spring and summer and see things at Source, so maybe there's some good opportunities to come see you in the field and see you out in your volunteer career as well.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Craig, and very nice to have met you.
Yes, Kate, you too.
I enjoyed speaking with you. It was a great whale watch.
Yes, there you go.
The best whale watch.
And if you're watching or listening at home and you have any follow-up questions for Pat or for any of us or any questions about the ILA or the union, I'm sure these gentlemen would love to tell you a little bit more about it. So thank you all so much for tuning in to this episode. We'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Good day.
Thanks so much for listening. listening.